From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, and Charleston's online home show, charlestonhomeanddesign.com, this is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. This is Talking About a Home.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. Special thanks to today's show producer, Izzy Mager. In addition to special thanks also to the great Chris Isaac for our home theme song. In addition to our radio show, Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the two custom home shows which we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which happens every January, and the Charleston Fall Home Show, which is coming up August 28th through 30th at Patriots Point in Mount Pleasant. Well, today we've got a great show lined up for you, as usual. We're going to be talking to two of our very long-standing advertisers at Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and what makes them special, besides advertising with us consistently for the entire life of Charleston Home and Design Magazine. Is that they advertised with us consistently over the last 26 years, and that would be Jay. We're going to be talking with an interview with Jay Rotten with Melser Tile, and this interview took place a couple of years ago, but I wanted to recognize Melser Tile as being our very first advertiser. When our parent company New Home Charleston first started, and they have advertised with us consistently over the last 27 years. We're also going to be talking to my dear friend, a man I call my brother, Rick Jackson with Carolina Machine Finishing. And this interview is from 2021. And what's interesting about this interview is besides Rick's day job at Carolina Machine Finishing, his real passion is helping others, and he has an organization. He works with a local organization called Remember Those, and they're an organization that takes medical mission trips. He takes MUSC, doctors from MUSC and Roper halfway across the world, mainly to Muslim countries where there are Christian minorities, where Christians are minorities, and they treat those folks, and they don't, they, not just Christians, but Muslims as well, anybody who needs it. But he was involved. They have a family in each country that they minister to, and he tells the story of that happened in August, started in August 2021, when the United States military was pulling out of Afghanistan, and he guided this family over the next 60 days. They were supposed to fly out of Kabul. Where you probably can remember a lot of the TV footage. There was a bomb blast that killed 13 service members. He tells the story of how he managed to, he and a lot of his teammates, he would never take credit for it himself, all by himself, but he helped a family of five Afghans that were working with, remember those, to escape Afghanistan. And I wanted to share those two interviews because they mean a lot to me. And plus, I think it's just very, very noteworthy. Think about those folks that are lucky enough to have long marriages. You know, what do you do for 26 years consistently? You know, it's pretty special. And so very special thanks to Melzer Tile, who signed on with us when this company first started in 1999. As well as Carolina Machine Finishing. They were our number two advertiser. And we've got so many different advertisers that have been with us for 10 plus years, 15 plus years, 20 plus years. Tony Moloff with Moloff's Plumbing Supply comes to mind, who's been with us for over 20 years. But I wanted to run those interviews mainly because this is the final show for talking about a home. Going forward, we will still be interviewing our advertisers like we do, like we normally do. But those interviews will not be aired on a traditional terrestrial radio station. They'll be heard online, and that's where a lot of things are going with the popularity of podcasts, for example, and people's listening habits, their viewing habits have changed, and Charleston Home and Design Magazine is changing how we disseminate information, how we promote our advertisers to the public. And so I wanted to, today's going to be kind of a bit of a review of where we've come from. This radio show started in 2007, so we've been on the air for almost 20 years. I worked for 8 years at a local radio station that a lot of locals will recognize, 96 Wave. But I was in sales, not on the air as a DJ. And all that time I've been hosting this radio show, I readily admitted that I am not a broadcast professional. I'm most definitely an amateur. So thank you to our listeners for putting up with me over almost 20 years on the air. I got the name for the radio show, talking about a home, with the help of my wife, Jenny. She is a Chris Isaak fan. And before I was, and we were listening to the 1998 Chris Isaak album, Speak of the Devil, when the song Talking About a Home came on. And I had been racking my brain trying to come up with a name for the radio show, and suddenly I heard Chris Isaak singing in the chorus, Talking About a Home, and I was like, that's it. That's the name of our radio show. At the time, this is back in 2007, we were shooting videos of our vendors at our home shows, and we contacted iHeartMedia, and we said, hey, could we buy some airtime? Because we'd like to run the audio from the video of these interviews with vendors at our home shows. We'd like to run those on the radio. And so we would shoot videos at our home show. We'd air the audio from those videos on the radio show, and then we would put those videos on YouTube. And we had enough content for a radio show to get it off the ground. But we only organize two home shows a year, so you cannot get enough content to air throughout the year with just two home shows. So we started inviting advertisers to the iHeartMedia studios in Mount Pleasant to record interviews for the show. And then we bought some recording equipment and would record the interviews at different advertiser locations, sort of remote broadcasts from earlier days. And during COVID, we had to shift gears because everything was closed. So we started interviewing advertisers over the phone, and that worked out great. So that's the way we've been operating ever since. What I've always loved about the radio show is that I've been able to help tell our advertisers' stories. And you ask any local business, they tell us your story. They have stories of ups and downs, and it's difficult to tell a business's story in a 30-second TV or radio ad, or even in a print ad in Charleston Home and Design magazine. It's difficult to tell the story of a business, and with a 1-hour radio show, we've been able to help those stories during 8 to 10 minute interviews that I've done with those folks. Well, Charleston Home and Design Magazine has grown organically over the 25 plus years we've been in business. Before the magazine, we started with a small coupon book that we direct mailed to new homeowners. And as I mentioned, I had worked at 96 Wave and had left my job in 1999 to start my own business. And I like the idea of targeting specific groups, kind of like what radio stations do. They target specific listeners demographically with their programming. But I realized that we could get a list of all the new homeowners who had just bought a home. And I had noticed that as a new homeowner myself, I was spending a ton of money fixing up my 100-year-old home I'd bought near Hampton Park. I even remember visiting a home show at the old Gilliard and talking to Southern Lumber about buying some porch caps for the front porch. So I thought it'd be a great idea to mail a coupon book to new homeowners. I had started this new business with my business partner at the time, Todd Smith, who I persuaded to leave his job as a flight nurse with the MUSC Medicare helicopter, making great money to start New Home Charleston. And the two of us got the coupon book off the ground, and advertisers were getting calls, so it was going great. But we realized we were not making enough money, so we grew organically. We decided to target the building industry and start a home magazine along with our first home show in 2004. The magazine and our first home shows were instant successes. For better or worse, I've always operated New Home Charleston, also known as Charleston Home and Design Magazine, out of a sense of fear of failure. My mindset was we need to do everything we can to get our advertisers' sales from the ads that we were running with us. So the radio show was born. Our company morphed into almost an ad agency hybrid, where we have been doing the work of an ad agency for our advertisers. Our thought was, people do more than just read magazines. They listen to the radio, they go to home shows, so why not create those offerings for our advertisers and for the public? And our advertisers got calls from their interviews on the radio show. They got sales from people seeing our advertisers at the home shows, and calls from the ads in Charleston Home and Design Magazine. We took on a mindset that we don't care how we get our advertisers business as long as we get them business, and we have, and we continue to get our advertisers business. Well, at some point, somewhere between 2010 and 2020, I decided to add a new twist to the radio show that I hope our listeners have enjoyed as much as I have, and that's the home theme songs that we started airing. And I had noticed on my morning walks, listening to the radio and Spotify, that there were a lot of songs that mentioned the word home. And so we decided to start airing 30-second snippets from a song when they mentioned the word home at the beginning of our radio show. Now I'd like to leave you by playing those two interviews from our two original advertisers, Melser Tile and Carolina Machine Finishing. And thanks so much to our listeners, to our advertisers, to all of the staff over the years for making Charleston Home and Design a great success. Take care. And talking to us now is Jay Rotten with Melser Tile. How are you doing, Jay?
Doing great, Tim.
Good. Jay, take a moment and tell everyone about Melser Tile.
We are in family-owned tile distributor, which means that we buy from the factory and sell to dealers, homeowners, builders, just whoever would like to buy it. We also sell natural stone. We have a 7,500-square-foot showroom right here in North Charleston. We also have a 30,000-square-foot warehouse full of product that is ready to ship out to you anytime.
Gotcha. And we have a lot of newcomers to the area. They may not be aware of how long Melser Tile has been around. Your parents started the business. Talk about that a little bit.
They did. They started the business back in 1968, June the 1st of 1968, we went in business. And so we just celebrated this June. We just celebrated our 56th anniversary. And we are mighty proud to have been a part of the Charleston community for so long.
Oh, congratulations on that. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, and to have taken over the business from your parents and not just sustained it but have grown it, that's a big compliment to you and your people.
Yes, we have a wonderful staff that's been with me for quite some time. We had two folks just celebrate 20 years with us, and a lot of my folks have been here 10 years or longer, and we are certainly blessed to have those people on our team.
Well, that's great. What are some of your secrets to success, you think, at Melser Tile?
Well, I think the first one is hiring really good people and having them have a good understanding of how our customers want to be treated, and then treat our customers that way. And, you know, customer service starts in our mind when you walk in the door, and it doesn't end after you pick up your order or your contractor picks up your order. If you have a cleaning or a maintenance issues down the road, we're always here. We stand behind our product, and you know, if need be on a job, we can call a vendor in or whatever. But we're here for the long haul. We would like to do generational business with the folks around Charleston.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And when you refer to your people, you've got the back of the house folks and the contractor sales showroom and the warehouse. But then you also have a very competent staff of tile designers that help homeowners. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we certainly do. So we'd like to take you from, you know, beginning to end with that. And our showroom manager, for instance, has been here for 18 years. A lot of the ladies up front have been here 7, 8, 10 years. And they are fantastic at what they do. They're going to go all the way through it. And the first thing we're going to do is listen. And we're going to try to find out if you are kind of in a hurry and just need tile because your builder said you do, or if you are trying to create a space that's just really special to you. So the most important thing we can do as salespeople is to listen and figure out what your goals are, and then we're going to help you get there.
Yeah, and when it comes to picking out tile, it can be a do-it-yourself thing, but I wouldn't recommend it. There's just too many choices. How many? Just take a guesstimate. How many different types of tile does Melser Tile have on hand?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I know at last count we stock over 250 different tiles. So. And yeah, you're right, Tim. I mean, we can help you if you want to do the do-it-yourself thing, but you really need to be talking with some competent folks if you're going to do it yourself, because, you know, every tile can't be just because you can use it on the wall doesn't mean you can necessarily use it on the floor, and that's where you really need some help and some guidance going through that process.
Yeah, and it in my experience, when we built our house 15 years ago and we have Melser Tile product throughout our home, my experience is it's like a puzzle, and you might find the right tile, but then you realize you don't have the budget for it, or you might but there's all sorts of different ways to get around that, to substitute and different types of tile to meet your budget. But when it comes to trying to pull it all together, boy, I imagine that you have the tile designers on staff, but do you get a lot of interior designers who are accompanying their customers to pick out the tile at Melser Tile?
Oh, absolutely. And they're a very important part of our business, and many of them go back years and years with us. And I guess, Tim, you know, the showroom is fairly large, and it can be a little bit intimidating if you haven't picked out tile before. And so our job as salespeople here is to sort of keep helping you eliminate portions of it until we get it down to a smaller group, and then we get it down to, you know, exactly what the customer wants. And that could be, like you mentioned before, that could either be a certain look or that could be a certain budgetary restriction. And all those things we certainly take seriously and keep in mind during the selection process.
Yeah, and I can throw in a quick story. Probably 10 years ago when we were on vacation at Universal down in Florida, the hotel we stayed at, we loved the look of the walk-in shower. And so I took a photo of that, and it had had subway tile, and then it had like some large format kind of a slate-looking tile on the floor. And I brought it into Melser Tile and a photo of it, and just said, "Can you help me find this?" And it turned out you folks had some white subway tile in that was discontinued and was discounted, and I was able to get enough for my project. It was great. It was, you know, being able to show a photo and say, "This is what I want," and your people were more than happy to accommodate me.
Right, right. Yeah, we love those challenges, and chances are, if it's popular, we either keep it in stock or can typically get it within, I would say, 7 to 10 days.
Well, here's something that I think a lot of our listeners are not aware of. There is different qualities of tile out there, and you've always mentioned throughout the year about Melser Tile vetting the tile. In other words, you know, making sure that what you're selling is good quality. Can you talk about the differences between, you know, what may appear to be good tile, but it's not really good tile?
Yeah, it can be hard to tell with all the product that's coming in from different places overseas. But everything that we sell is going to be a standard grade or an A grade, however you want to refer to it. Everybody has a little different vocabulary on that. And then in our industry, there are also what we call kiln runs, which are they're not as high quality. You wouldn't be, like, if you came back and you were four or five tiles short, you may not be able to find that same dye lot or run number. And there are lots of folks out there that sell those, or what we call seconds, which have maybe a blemish in them or whatever. And we have never been comfortable selling that product because, as I mentioned before, if we sell it, we're going to stand behind it. And so for that reason, yeah, we have vendors that we've dealt with for long, long periods of time, and they'll come around with a seconds list, and hey, you can save money on this. That's just not really a market that we're interested in being in.
Right, right. And does some of that tile, because there's a lot of downward pressure on prices at some of the big box stores. For instance, I've mentioned this several times over the years about how the plumbing fixtures that you buy at a big box store are going to have plastic parts inside them versus brass parts that you would get for plumbing fixtures at one of the local places versus a big box store. Is the same true with tile?
Yeah, and I won't put a blanket statement on it, but a lot of those products are some of the kiln run or seconds type material that I had mentioned before. I don't know exactly what the percentage is, but when people come in and try to get me to identify it, like a floor tile typically is way thinner, and you know, sometimes the sizing is not very good on those. So as I said before, that's just not a market that we're interested in being in, because we're all about, you know, selling you a product and service before, during, and after the sale. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. Jay, I understand that Melser Tile just underwent a minor facelift in terms of updating the displays and things like that. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So we have what we call vignettes all along the back of the showroom. I think there's like 16 of them, and we just did 11 of them over, and we're about to start changing some floors out over the next several months. And you know, we have to do that at nights and on the weekends, and it makes a little bit of a mess, so it turns into a little bit of a slower process. But we've also upgraded a lot of the samples and everything. The showroom looks as good as it's ever looked, very bright and appealing. And so, yeah, so we're always things are always changing, and we're always updating. So, yeah, this is this last update has really been nice, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from customers and builders and whatnot.
Mm. Do you ever think about how much the tile industry has grown and Melzer Tile, when your parents first started out, they probably sold a ton of those 4x4 little tiles that sometimes you see on countertops and backsplashes and in bathrooms and so forth it is today.
For sure. I mean, there were very little backsplashes sold back then. I mean, if you got, you know, all two or two and a half of the bathrooms that were in a home back then, you were pretty lucky. So we've been really, really blessed with, you know, tile and the tile industry as a whole doing a good job selling itself, but moving into, you know, kitchen floors and backsplashes and, screen porches, exterior decks, pool surrounds, that kind of thing. So, yeah, we've got a lot bigger market to sell than they did back then. I mean, the trends, I mean, you mentioned the 4x4s. When I was a kid working up here during the summers, I mean, that was all we would sell, seemed like all day long was 4x4s.
And those are 4-inch by 4-inch, too.
Yeah, 4-inch by 4-inch. Yeah, now we're selling the 48-inch by 48-inch for floors and for walls. We're also selling a lot of the thin porcelain slabs, which are like 5 foot by 10 foot, are probably our most popular size right now is a 24 by 48, so 2 foot by 4 foot. We keep several of those in stock, and they're absolutely beautiful. Obviously, there are a few more challenges as far as installing them, but we can go through all of that. And if somebody wants to do a project and needs a qualified installer, we do not install, but we can put you in contact with an installer.
Yeah, you need a nice level floor or whatever surface you're putting it on to install a 2 foot by 4 foot tile, right?
That's exactly right. And we have all the products that we keep in stock as far as setting materials to either flatten that floor or flatten that wall. And then we have a full line of maintenance products as far as cleaners and sealers and anything that you might need as far as that goes.
Yeah, you get a lot of the tile installers. You've mentioned that before about how you will go out and talk with the tile installers when they're picking up their materials to install the tile that you folks sell.
Yeah, that's right. They are incredibly important to our business, and we kind of refer to them as either installers or bucket and trowel guys. And we really try to do a good job of continuing to educate them because, you know, typically, I mean, they're just going to pick up whatever the homeower or the builder wants and install it. And you know, when you go from setting a 12 by 12 one day to a 48 by 48 the next day, there are obviously some challenges involved with that. And we stay up on all the current installation trends and things of that nature and try to educate those guys and help them along as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I highly respect, regarding picking out tile. I highly respect those folks that are such forward thinkers that they are, that they don't need the tile for a few months to install it for their project. So they pick it out well in advance. But there's a lot of people who get that proverbial call from their builder that, hey, you need to have your tile picked out by tomorrow. And when that happens, how much tile is in stock at Melzer Tile? Will you be able to pick it up and go basically the same day?
Yeah, I said it before. I hope the number's right. I know it's got to be pretty close. But at last count, we have about 250 different tiles in stock.
In stock.
And so that may be a line where we have a 24 by 48, a 12 by 24, a, you know, 2x4 or a 2x2 for the shower floor, and then the matching trims that go along with it. So, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, whether you're a retail customer working with a builder, if you want to come in here today, pick something out off of our stock wall, which, again, is pretty a good number of products on that wall, you know, you could conceivably come in here, make the deal, and let's, you know, we'll load you up today. Mm-hmm. Our warehouse guys will load you up. You don't have to put it in a basket and push it to the front and then handle it two or three times before you get it to your home. we'll put it in your vehicle, and then all you got to do is carry it in your house.
Right, right. And take advantage of Melser Tiles, tile designers that you folks, and you usually recommend that they a homeowner makes an appointment to, so they can have some time devoted to them, right?
That is correct, because we get super busy in the showroom, and so the last thing we want is for somebody to come in and us not have enough people to help them, even though we have six ladies up there that are designers. But if you would like to walk in just as an initial visit, you are certainly more than welcome to do that. And if one of the salespeople are available, they'll certainly get over there and help you, or you can just come in, kind of browse around, and make an appointment for a later date, and our receptionist can help with all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to we're almost out of time, but I did want to mention I just wanted to personally say thank you to you, Jay, for being such a long time advertiser with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And in fact, and this has been kicked around a lot among some of our other longtime advertisers. They'll say, "Well, who was your first?" And we're always proud to say Melser Tile was our very first advertiser to come on board at Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And you've been a consistent advertiser in it year in and year out for 25 years that we've been around. So. Thank you so much, Jay, for putting your trust and confidence in us.
Oh, absolutely. I can remember that first meeting almost like it was yesterday. You had the little small book, and to see where you guys have come and where we've all come together is pretty amazing. So, thank you guys for promoting our company as well as all the other ones out there. I know the magazine is very well thought of in the community.
Oh, that's great. And if you don't mind, your account rep here at Charleston Home and Design Magazine, she related a story to me and that you had told her, and that was your ad agency had instructed you, don't buy any print except for Charleston Home and Design Magazine.
Yes, she sure did. She said that's the one you need to be in. We don't need to talk to the rest of them. We're certainly taking her advice.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Melser Tile for being on board as an advertiser with us for 25 years. And if my count is right, that's 100 different issues, 100 quarterly issues for Charleston Home and Design Magazine. So. That's quite a lot, and when I talk to folks about some of our long time advertisers like Melser Tile, they're amazed. They just can't believe that we have such loyal customers, and that's really contributed to our success. So again, thank you to Jay Rotten with Melser Tile for being such a long term advertiser. And how can folks get more information about Melser Tile?
You can go to our website at melsertile.com, MelserTile.com, or you can give us a call, 843-744-5345, or you can visit our facility at 4965 Dorchester Road in North Charleston.
All right, great. Well, we've been talking with Jay Rotten with Melser Tile. Thanks so much, Jay.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Have a great day.
And joining us on the phone right now is Rick Jackson with Carolina Machine Finishing. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well. Tim, how are you?
Just fine. Besides running Carolina Mobile Storage and Carolina Machine Finishing, you are also involved with a local organization called Remember. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Tim, I'd be glad to, and thanks for the opportunity to do that. I've been privileged to work with Remember for the past 15 years. It's a local Charleston-based organization, nonprofit, that services folks around the world, any nation, who are persecuted, those that are actually disadvantaged because of usually their religious belief. And so we work in Burma, south of China. We worked in southwest China, Iraq, North Sudan, South Sudan, Liberia, western part of Africa, Egypt, Jordan, a number of places that aren't really high on people's tourism list, but places where persecution takes place the most, where there's people that are disadvantaged, even to the point of murder. And we go into those areas. We take medical teams in there. Tactical teams go in and offer medical aid and assistance. And any type of help we can do to help either help them be able to weather the circumstances that they're living under and or escape if escape becomes necessary.
And all of the countries that you just mentioned, those are they seem to be primarily Muslim countries, and the folks that you are helping are typically Christian minorities that live in those Muslim countries?
That is true, and that, you know, because our primary mission is, and that is, you know, one of the single greatest persecuted groups in the world are Christians, because they live in these areas, and those where in our country you can be Muslim, you can be, you know, Buddhist, you can be Christian, and dwell among our neighbors peaceably, and it doesn't happen in other countries. So they're, you know, usually the primary breadwinner is targeted under pressure of conversion, and if they don't convert, the primary breadwinner, the male of the family, will often lose their life, leaving behind a widow and children that then can be disadvantaged just because of a need to exist, to feed the kids, and they're disadvantaged. So our goal is to go in and find those. As we go in to do that, we wind up ministering to a lot of folks. We've ministered to the Buddhist. We minister to the Muslim. We go in with a love for people, primarily looking to target those that are in greatest need.
Mm-hmm. And these are you take local doctors, typically from MUSC. Is that right?
That is right. The Roper MUSC system has they're just an incredible medical network here in Charleston that have a heart to work outside of themselves and just the daily life and daily routine, and they'll travel with us under some very adverse conditions. They pay their own way. They sacrifice a loss of income when they leave the office or practice. So it's kind of a unique vacation to take a week or two off to pay for your expense to go, to lose that income, but to go to another part of the world to care for people, to minister to help those that aren't as fortunate as we are. We live in one of the greatest nations in the world, and it's a blessing to watch these medical doctors give incredibly. I've stood in awe watching Charleston's finest doing things that would make any person proud, and they're unsung heroes.
What motivates these doctors? Because they're obviously they're stretched thin already. They're very busy, and then to be able to, you know, to take valuable time off that they could be spending, you know, on a family vacation or with their family in general, for them to do this. What motivates them?
Their love for others. I mean, and then Jesus once said it, that, you know, no greater love hath any man that he'll lay down his life for another. And that doesn't mean to die for him. It means to sacrifice for them. It's one thing to die for somebody. It's another thing to lay down your practice, to lay down your income, to lay down your comfort, to lay down your happiness, to lay down your self-satisfaction and do something, you know, that costs you for another. That's truly the definition of love. It doesn't get any reciprocation, so it's given with nothing in return. And to watch these doctors and not just doctors, but we take many people from the Charleston construction industry. We have, you know, lumber yards that give graciously to help building projects, and to watch them get on that airplane all excited going to a different country, watch them labor tirelessly, countless hours, climb on that airplane totally exhausted, and come back home. But everyone, usually the first question asked is, when is the next trip? So it's not, there's no regrets. They go excited to return again and do that there or to other locations.
Right. Well, Rick, there was an article in last Sunday's Post and Courier about Remember, and it described it as a local faith-based organization that had directly assisted the evacuation of a family and that was trapped in Afghanistan. Can you talk about that and your role in that?
I sure can. It would be our staff family there, in indigenous Afghans who work there and, you know, work as an extension of us, because you have to have eyes on the ground to be able to understand. You can't just go into a country like that and identify those that are in need or those that are persecuted. So in every country we have, you know, staff families that we help support there. And this was that staff family in Afghanistan. And when everything began to break loose prior to the evacuation, their lives became endangered because there was the process of hunting Christians, hunting those that had helped Americans, those with special visas, green card holders, and blue passport holders became targeted for harm. And our staff family, a family of five, was trapped in the northern part of Afghanistan. And with the military pulling out, we were able to get them onto the documented list for evacuation out of Kabul. So we had to move them that direction to Kabul, to a safe house and hiding, waiting their turn to get into the airport to get on the list, because they were authorized to leave the country. And unfortunately, when they got to Kabul, things did not go the way the government had reported it would go. You know, countless thousands of people were left behind, and our family became one of those that were left behind. And then for the following 6-7 weeks was a series of events, Tim, of moving them to different safe houses, trying to get them out of the country by a neighboring border, trying to get them visas to other countries. Of course, with no air travel out or anything, it just became a real mess. And I was directly involved. We were up many, many nights talking to them on the phone. We were using secured digital communications to communicate with them, trying to get them into the airport in those last days. And it there were times when their lives literally were in extreme danger.
Yeah, and you told me this happened just a few days before the Charleston Fall Home Show happened, August 27th through the 29th. Like, I think it was the day that vendors were loading in on that Thursday was that terrible blast explosion that occurred. That killed 13 service members and at the Kabul airport, and you were directing this family to the gates on that same day.
Yes, and we were notified by of the agency that the group that we were working with to help get them out, which was the Nazarene Fund, and they had a scheduled flight, and our family was scheduled to be on that flight. We had tried to get them in another gate of the airport, and that attempt had failed. So that we were directed to get them to the Abbey Gate, the very gate that was bombed. And I was tasked, just because of my past life and understanding of some of the Middle East culture and language, with direct communication. So by watching them on a simple app like Google Maps, I was able to track their whereabouts as they headed toward the Abbey Gate. When they would let me know by phone that there was a Taliban checkpoint ahead, and when the car would approach a Taliban checkpoint, the Taliban would begin to fire in the air to warn the car not to approach, and if the car approached, they would fire at the car. So my job was to vector them around those Taliban checkpoints, watching from overhead on Google Maps and turning them, giving them street turns, turn by turn direction to get them close to the Abbey Gate. We got them within about, I'd say, 400 yards, and they were getting out of the car, and I was going to, because there was a Taliban checkpoint there, and I was getting ready to vector them down a street. And this is a family, mother and father and three small children, and to walk them to the Abbey Gate. And as they got out of the car and as they began to make that journey, the Taliban opened fire on the crowd of people. And so at that point in time, I directed them back to the taxi and back to the safe house as expedited as they could possibly get. They escaped harm, but it was that gate that was bombed. So more than likely, had they made it to the gate, they could have been, killed with those, 13 war heroes of the United States and countless Afghanis that lost their lives.
Wow. And and then you got them away from the Kabul airport, but then how long did it take to ultimately make arrangements to evacuate them?
Well, the process continued. There was literally 24-hour-a-day communications, only if our staff family was sleeping. But even then, there would be interrupted calls. Our secure app would pop open, and all of us that were working here in Charleston and in parts around the United States would be alerted. So sometimes you'd sleep for a half hour, sometimes 3 hours. Sometimes you get a whole night's sleep, and then some nights we didn't get any sleep. So we moved them probably, we lost count, maybe 7 to 8 safe houses. We worked tirelessly to get them visas to other countries. We moved them to a neighboring border of, to the neighboring border of Pakistan at one point in time. There were a group of operatives, we'll call them, hired operatives that were hired on both the Pakistan side and the Afghan side to be able to get them through the gate. And after multiple nights of unsuccessful attempts, we directed them back to Kabul. And then we were contacted by the Nazarene Fund again that there was a flight to be taken, that their name had been placed on a list out of a northern airport. So we had to then relocate them to that northern airport. You go through probably 10 Taliban checkpoints there. If there's anything identified on you that associates you with an American, your life was in danger. You could have been killed on the spot, as people were being killed on the spot. We were able to get them back to the northern area. And then the call came that their name finally had climbed the list of a Nazarene Fund flight, which means you've got to make it through Taliban checkpoints. You have to make it into the airport. This family was well-known, recognizable. And those moments there, it was horrifying for all of us because, if you could not bribe the Taliban, which many of them are motivated by money, if you couldn't bribe them, and they were just truly a religious zealot, they could have killed them. But when we got to notice that they were in the airport, I was watching from overhead, watching on flight radar 24. When you saw the auxiliary power unit connect to the aircraft and the pilots begin to pull up the gear on their cockpit, the ADS-B kicks in, and all of a sudden it starts transmitting a signal. We knew they were in the airport safely. After 8 horrifying weeks, and the airplane was at that point in time preparing to take passengers, and over the next hour they were on the plane, and then the plane took off, and at 5:12 Thursday, October, I think it was 12th, we watched them cross out of Afghan airspace into Iranian airspace heading to Abu Dhabi.
Wow. And Rick, you had kept me updated throughout this whole process, and I think you told me you started making filling out applications for visas like a Sunday morning at 7 a.m. and then didn't finish until like 4 a.m. the next day doing all of that. Is that correct?
That is correct, Tim. It was about 17 straight hours of making applications because many countries had been denied by the State Department to even allow Afghans to even get a visa. Places that would have been normally easy, like Turkey. Turkey is very easy for an Afghan to get a visa, but that was the first country I tried, and it was denied. I had all their information. I had their passports. I had all, their national ID cards. So I personally made the application, and we worked and we worked and we worked for 17, 19 straight hours, and every country would deny it immediately. And it was only the first nation to actually accept a visa for an Afghan to escape was the nation of Uganda. Probably not the place you would think would do that. So you think of Entebbe, but they are now safely in the United Arab Emirates, thanks to the royal family of the United Arab Emirates hosting the humanitarian city there. So they'll be there for about 4 to 6 weeks, and with our same group here working tirelessly, team of attorneys, a team of really committed personnel, former pilots, you know, Air Force pilots, C-17 pilots. It's an amazing group of people, Tim. I am a teeny tiny cock. I just happen to be the guy on the radio today, of just incredibly gifted people, loving people, sacrificing people. There are folks on that team that literally probably lost, you know, I mean, 7 nights, no less, in that two month period that they never slept a wink. And did it for nothing. They got paid nothing. They did it simply out of love for others.
Yeah. And some of these, all of this work was really done without the public really understanding or knowing what was going on, and with very little help from the State Department and so forth. And you mentioned that they were on a Nazarene flight. Is that, that's Glenn Beck's?
That was, and we had the privilege, Tim. I mean, during that whole process, members of our organization, members of Remember, were able had conversations with Glenn Beck's assistant producer, who is just an incredibly gifted guy and wonderful help. I won't call his name right now, but I would love to. He just wouldn't want the recognition. And they worked, raised money, and many organizations worked. You know, Pineapple Express, Mighty Oaks, Nazarene Fund. The actual flight, the group that actually sponsored the aircraft was Mercury One. And it was a group of retired military, private citizens, people who just gave when the United States government quit giving and quit participating. It actually became a hindrance more than a help to stop these private organizations trying to rescue people. And they're still doing it, Tim. Just about 2 hours ago, I watched a flight, a Mercury One flight, take off out of the northern airport heading to Abu Dhabi, and they're still working. It's still going on, but it doesn't make the news. Nobody's talking about it. But daily, there's probably over 300 people rescued out of that country, but there are tens of thousands of people that were left behind.
Wow. And this all doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's not there's no all of these the bribes that are required to pass through those Taliban checkpoints, the money has to come from somewhere. And we have some listeners that might be interested in helping themselves and contributing. And could you give some information on how they could perhaps donate to Remember?
Certainly, Tim, and you know, I know you wouldn't want me to say this, but I thank you and Miss Jenny for your graciousness. For the listeners out there, you know, Tim may do this, but he cares about people, and it's that love of others that makes Tim such a dear man and his wife Jenny such a dear person, and why I love them, and they're such dear friends to me, because they get done just that, as given. And I know you don't want me to say that, and you can't take that off the radio program either. But we would love for them, if they want to give. What we do is assure people that 100% of your donations go to help the folks. None of it's used. It's all underwritten by local business, and all the expenses, the paper, the staff, everything is taken care of. Travel of personnel is taken care of. When you give, it's one of those few things you can give to that 100% of your money goes to the need. And you can do that by simply going to our website, which is rememberthose.org, and you can make a contribution right online, or you can get our address there, mail a check, and if anybody would ever be interested in traveling with us, we would certainly love to get their name and number in contact and see how they might fit for a future trip.
Right. And one of those businesses, former Congressman Curtis Bostick, he's an attorney, local attorney here, and his office administers everything with Remember, and there's no administrative costs or anything like that. That's a way that Curtis Bostick gives, correct?
That is correct. Curtis, he gives above and beyond that. Curtis personally and his law firm have given and paid for all the expenses and have done so for years. So there's no administrative cost that's charged to anybody else. There are other companies that do help contribute, but it is primarily Curtis. And then, of course, he participates in many of the trips and makes the sacrifices as well and will give up, you know, his practice and his businesses and things and travel overseas. And we've worked side by side in many of the darkest places in the world and would love to do it again.
Well, very good. And thank you so much, Rick, for the time today. And if people would like to donate to Remember, can you give that website one more time?
Yes, Tim. It's rememberthose.org.
Rememberthose.org. It's a local organization, faith-based organization based right here in Charleston. And so, you know, a lot of times when you make a donation, you wonder how much of that goes to the, you know, a CEO's big fat salary or something like that to run the nonprofit. But in this case, 100% of those funds are being used to help people that are persecuted in Muslim countries, and to help this wonderful family of five escape from Afghanistan. And will they be coming to the United States?
Well, that is their goal was to get to Pakistan so that they didn't want to abandon their people, Tim. That's the cool part about them. They love their people and they want to be among their people, but they're being hunted right now. So it would mean death for them. So they have, but it does look like once they make it there, I think the UNHCR, United Nations High Commission of Refugees, makes the decision where they'll be relocated to initially, and they have been notified that they will be relocated to the United States. So,
oh, that's great news.
And Curtis's office, they're working on all the paperwork. You know, Curtis and Danielle Walker and, you know, just dear folks there sacrificing, you know, incredible amounts of time to make that happen. But his desire is to make it back, he wants to make it back to a neighboring country and then eventually back to Afghanistan when the situation returns to safety. He's made it clear he does not want to become an American. He's been reading up on the American culture and he's a bit shocked at some of the cultural things that he thought would not be permissible. And we don't have any way to make him feel better about that because we're shocked about him too.
Me, I joined that club as well. Well, good deal. Well, thanks so much, Rick, for taking the time to talk about this.
Tim, thank you very much. Wish you and your wonderful team an awesome day.
Thank you. Thank you, you too. Not talking about a one-night stand. I want to be your man. I said, oh, oh, yeah.
You've been listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. To make contact with any of the companies featured on today's show or listen to previous week's shows, visit charlestonhomeanddesign.com. That's charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Please tune in again next weekend.